Steve and I have been close friends now for about 10 years. And I got a phone call from him over the summer. He said, you know that this Murdoch Trust and the Stewardship Foundation that I've been telling you about for so long? I said, yeah. He said, well, we're going to do something on storytelling this year, and we'd like you to come speak. And I said, that's fantastic. What's the date? And he said it was November 30th. I said, oh, well, Steve, I have a conflict because we actually got selected to be have the royal premiere with the Queen for Voyage of the Dawn Treader that night in London. And he said to me, well, you know, it's, whatever you want to decide. So I called my father. I told the story last night. My father, his parents are from Galway. And he said, Michael, I don't want you going near that Queen until she gets out of Northern Ireland. And so my decision was made for me. And so I called Steve back. I said, listen, this is, you know, great. I'm really looking forward to this. And then last week, I got a call from Steve. And Steve said to me, well, Michael, you're not going to believe this, but my wife just came into the kitchen. And she is a librarian in the state of Virginia. And she entered a contest that about 7,000 librarians entered to win an all-expenses-paid trip to London for the royal premiere of The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. And she came in and said, honey, I got great news. We're going to London next week. And he said, honey, I got news for you. I'm going to Vancouver. And so Steve's wife is out there, and along with her son, whose middle name is Lewis, named after C.S. Lewis, and my brother Chip out there as well. But God is good, because it actually snowed tonight in London, which gave us the perfect optics for the premiere. So we're getting everything we always wanted out of that. Obviously, tonight, what we want to talk about is storytelling. And how many folks here have read something from the Chronicles of Narnia? It's a beloved classic for a lot of us. And one of the things that I always loved about it, I think everyone dreams of becoming kings and queens. But the big question is, what do you do when you're put into that leadership role? Lewis doesn't talk about it that much, but there is one paragraph about the Pevensies' 30-year reign in Narnia at the very end. And I think that it's a good job to inform where a lot of your giving could go in the future. It's a good thing to inform politicians. Here's what the Pevensies did, you know, the tweens and teens ruling this world. Lewis told us that they made good laws and kept the peace and saved good trees from being cut down and liberated young dwarfs and young satyrs from being sent to school and generally stopped busybodies and interferers and encouraged ordinary people who just wanted to live and let live. And so the reason why I love that is because not only is homeschooling encouraged, it's legislated. And, you know, the reason why Lewis did that was because he wrote an awful lot about school. And Lewis was just really heartbroken over what was happening in schools to Great Britain. I was listening to an audiobook from Henry Nouwen the other day, and something I didn't know is that school comes from the word scola, and scola means free time. And so, you know, the initial idea, if you look at the etymology of this, is time to explore, time to ask the big questions. What's truth? What is friendship? What's courage? What's loyalty? But a lot of that was lost in Lewis's time, and a lot of that has been lost in our time as well, in terms of what kids are learning in school. The reason why Lewis was so interested in school was because for him, he thought that stories made all the difference. Lewis is always writing about stories. In The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, when the Pevensies first get to Narnia, they hear the story of this oral tradition that when two sons of Adam and two daughters of Eve get to the throne, that all will be made right. When the Pevensies return to Narnia, they find out that all of the talking animals have been driven underground. And the new tyrant that is in place there, King Miraz, he did something a lot more clever than the White Witch. He simply abolished talking about Narnia. No one could tell stories of talking animals anymore. And as a result, people reduced to their basest sort of instincts. But it's in this next movie, The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, where Lewis has the most to say about stories. He begins Voyage of the Dawn Treader with a line that's considered one of the 100 best in the history of English literature. There once was a boy named Eustace Clarence Scrub, and he almost deserved it. And the way that Lewis tells us why this guy is someone that no one enjoys and nobody appreciates is Lewis describes him by the books that he read. Lewis tells us that Eustace liked to read books if they were about imports and exports, or if they were about fat foreign kids doing exercises in developing nations, or about grain elevators. He didn't like to read books about knights and about courage and about heroism. So as a result, when Eustace gets to Narnia, he finds himself completely overmatched. He gets into a dragon's lair, and he ends up giving into his own dragonish thoughts, and he becomes a dragon himself. And Lewis said, if this had happened to Edmund or to Lucy, they would have known what to do when they were in the dragon's cave. But poor Eustace, his books were long on exports and short on dragons. Lewis is always talking about this, and Lewis actually corresponded with quite a few people, because after The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe came out, the question that people asked him was, do you think these stories are too scary for kids? You know, shouldn't we be protecting ourselves from kids? These are kind of intense. And Lewis's response was, you know, absolutely, we have every obligation to protect our kids and to hold on to their innocence. But at the same time, they're born into a cruel world. They're born into a fallen world where we have things like communism and where we have things like the atomic bomb. So it's better that they know that they're going to meet cruel enemies and that they can be defeated, and to tell them about heroic knights and courage. Because by doing that, we're actually making their future brighter, not darker. So as we're talking about stories here, the big question is, what are we reading now? What are people reading? What are the stories that are really capturing people's attention? And the short answer is, not much. A few years ago, the National Endowment of the Arts did a study called Reading at Risk. And it was the most comprehensive study ever done on the reading habits of folks in the United States. And what it found was that fewer than half of the people in this country have read a single book in the last year. This is something that goes across all ages, all demographics, all areas. And it's a real problem, because when you look at those statistics, people who don't read literature are less likely to vote, they're less likely to volunteer, they're less likely to support the arts, and they're certainly unlikely candidates to be in this room. So we decided to do something a little contradictory and start a movie company that would make films out of books to hopefully drive people back to the stories that they were reading. The way that I came up with this idea, and one of the reasons why I love being here in this room of all these, it's amazing what you people have accomplished, and I'm looking forward to talking more about that later. This company actually started with a nonprofit in Boston called the Stepping Stone Foundation. And the Stepping Stone Foundation was committed to creating educational opportunities for kids who were being robbed of them based on their income level or based on their zip code. They were put into lousy, failing school systems. So what we would do is we would work with these kids, because we have great exam schools in Massachusetts, but you have to pass a test to get into there, and if you get in there, you're going to get one of the best educations that you can get. But trying to teach kids on Tuesday and Thursday nights and Saturday mornings can be a little challenging. So the way that we would always break the ice was we would ask kids, what'd you do last night? And the answer was always the same. You know, we watched this show on television, we went to this movie, we listened to this CD. It was what these kids were up to. And then finally, one week, something interesting happened. They said, oh, yesterday we went and we saw Titanic. And then the next week, I said, what did you guys do last night? And they said, we went and saw Titanic again. That was the first time I heard that they had done it. And then the next week, they said, you know what we did last week is, don't tell anybody, but we went to the library and we got out some books about the Titanic. And then the next week, they said, we went to the museum. They had a whole exhibit on the Titanic. And I stuck my hand into this ice-cold water. And just for one second, I knew what it was like to be one of those people who was stuck in that water. And when I was there, I realized that here in Dorchester, there really wasn't much of a difference between, you know, some of these kids had lost members of their family to gun violence. But there wasn't much of a difference between a gun in the streets of Dorchester and an iceberg in the middle of the North Atlantic almost 100 years ago. Both of them robbed lives, you know, before its time. Both of them tore families apart, and both of them brought about unspeakable tragedy. At the exact same time that this was happening, as I mentioned to some of the folks last night, everyone was glued to their television on April 20th after two students walked into their high school in Columbine and murdered 12 of their classmates and one of their teachers. As the days went by and people tried to make sense of this, one of the things that came up, one of the recurring themes, was these two kids, very bright, intelligent young men, were obsessed with certain kinds of media. They were obsessed with violent video games. There was a movie called Natural Born Killers that they watched dozens and dozens of times. So they declared that day, April 20th, which was Adolf Hitler's birthday, Natural Born Killers Day. And they were going to go into there and they were going to shoot up that school. And they decided that what they were going to wear were long black trench coats, because another movie that they saw that they really liked was a movie called Basketball Diaries, where Leonardo DiCaprio used to have a dream fantasizing about putting on a long black trench coat and going into his school and shooting his classmates. So that drove me completely to despair when I heard about that, and it couldn't really make much sense of it, and it really depressed me. But then I started to read stories about some of the people that were murdered. I read about the first girl that was killed, a girl named Rachel Joy Scott. And Rachel Scott was a girl that was at a Christian school. And just like Mark's illustration today about salt, and salt is not good if it stays in the salt shaker, Rachel said, I don't want to stay here at this school. I want to go to the public school, and I want to lead people to Christ. And I want to tell them about this truth and about this good news. And Rachel was the first person to look in the barrel of a gun and hear someone say, do you believe in God? And Rachel was brave enough to look at them and say, I do. And they shot her. They then walked into the library where Craig's brother was, where Rachel's brother Craig was. Now, poor Craig that morning had been late for school. His sister Rachel was driving him in. And Craig's last words to Rachel were words of anger. He slammed the door on her and he walked away. Little did he know he was never going to see her again. And when Craig was lying there in the library, the person to his right and the person to his left were both murdered. And Craig just sat there and he prayed and he hoped that he could escape. And then Cassie Bernal, a girl that was one row behind him, was also taunted and mocked by the shooters. And they said to her, do you believe in God? And Cassie looked up at them and Craig heard her say this. And she looked up at them and said, I do, and you should as well. And those were the last words that Cassie ever spoke. So Craig was able to make it out of there that day and actually give his story and his testimony on the Today Show the next day. And when I saw that, I realized that I didn't have the courage that these 16-year-old girls had. If someone pointed a gun in my face, I would have tried every rationalization. I would have been worse than Peter. You know, well, I think there's a life force, you know, I don't know, of course I don't. And so I was ashamed, and I went on the internet and I tried to figure out what this personal relationship with Christ was all about. And I went across the street. I lived in an apartment that was right across the street from the biggest evangelical church in New England. When I mentioned this to someone in Texas, he said, oh, the biggest evangelical church in New England. You and the five others must be real proud of yourselves. And so I went over there, and the sermon that day was on John Newton, and they played the song Amazing Grace. And I went back to my apartment that night, and I gave my life to Christ. And then just sort of coming to the rules of what it meant to have a personal relationship with God, I knew the next thing I had to do was get quickly to a Christian bookstore and buy a fish sticker for the back of my car. And I did that. I bought a Darlene Check CD, and I changed the signature on my email to Philippians 4:4, the one scripture verse that I knew. And you know, proceeded to, you know, be the most obnoxious guy, stopping people at red lights and everything else. And my fiance at the time, you know, also committed her life to Christ. And so it was a great time. It was late April of 99, and something that happens, and I know there's Jacine is here from Young Life, and there's nothing like that experience when someone is first led to Christ, because the Holy Spirit just floods you and just makes you completely fearless, and you think that you can do absolutely anything. So I had gotten in touch with my old roommate from college, and I was, you know, I was just going through the phone book, just calling people, trying to, you know, convert them. And I was talking to him, and I just said, he asked me what I was up to, and I told him about how I was working with these kids, improving their test scores and trying to get them into school. And he said to me, you know, I'm getting a little tired of my job. He was the president of a big movie company at the time. He said, I've been thinking of doing something with teaching. And I said, well, look, I think God gave you different gifts. Why don't you just make different kinds of movies? And, you know, these kids keep talking about Titanic. What if you made movies that were based on great events in history? He said, well, you know, that would be really complicated. It would require a lot of money. You'd have to write a business plan. And I said to him, look, Carrie, I work at IBM. I know how to write a business plan. What I didn't tell him was I worked in the encyclopedia division. So I was essentially the 21st century equivalent of an encyclopedia salesman. And I flunked micro and macroeconomics in college. But I lived up the street from Barnes & Noble, and I bought business plans for dummies. So we wrote a business plan, and we got laughed out of every single venture capital company, you know, from New York to San Francisco. There was a guy in New York who literally fell asleep during one of the meetings. And it was a great ethical question, because they said, this guy would be so embarrassed to admit that he fell asleep. I'm just going to find his checkbook, wake him up, and say, thank you so much for this $50 million. This was a great meeting. But it didn't work. So the last meeting that we could afford was with a meeting with a gentleman in Denver named Phil Anschutz. And a few minutes into the meeting, he said, okay, I get it. I understand what you guys are talking about. It's a point I had been to in many a meeting over the last year. I said, well, thank you for your time. He said, no, I'm interested in investing. I said, you're kidding. And he said, no, really. You just need to stick to this. He goes, I got two rules. You just need to stick to this mission, and you can only hire people who believe in this mission, to use media to really transform lives. And so we've gotten to a point where I really just didn't expect to get to. My only experience up to that point, other than my six-month stint at IBM, was I worked in state politics all my life. So the one thing I know from working in state government is that when you have jobs, you hire your friends and your family. So I called my two brothers, I called my roommates, and so at one point when you would call our voicemail, you know, it'd say, you know, type in the last name, you know, type in F-L-A-H, and it's like, press 1 for Mike Flaherty, 2 for Kelly Flaherty, and we were like the first 6 people in the voicemail was a Flaherty. And my wife, though, was a school teacher at St. Peter's School in South Boston, and so we basically just went through her 5th grade reading list, and we made, you saw some of those movies there. Holes, Charlotte's Web, Bridge to Terabithia, Because of Winn-Dixie. These were all of the stories off of her reading list. The one that I enjoyed the most, though, was Phil had this idea to make this movie about William Wilberforce, and he was someone that I didn't know anything about. And so it was a great opportunity to study up on this guy and also study up on John Newton, who had played, you know, a pretty significant role in my faith journey. And so as we were looking up information on Wilberforce, it was amazing because he lived this thesis that Mark always talks about, that culture is upstream from politics. And he realized that that was the best way to affect people. He also knew that legislation is not as powerful as voluntary societies. He started 65 different voluntary societies. I think it was the first animal welfare society, the first Bible society, the first, I think, art museum, the list goes on. And Wilberforce was great because he loved to team up with co-belligerents. And as long as you were against the same thing, that was fine with Wilberforce. So he had this great motley crew of people who were all united in the cause of freedom to do something to abolish slavery. Something that we like to do at Walden is to partner with as many groups as possible. With Amazing Grace, we were able to partner with International Justice Mission and try to do everything we could to draw our attention to the issue of modern-day slavery. With a lot of other groups, right now we're in the middle of something which is I'm just getting the biggest kick out of. We're working with Samaritan's Purse. And we have Georgie Henley, who's the actress who plays Lucy, recorded a great public service announcement that says, you know, when we first got to Narnia, it was always winter and never Christmas, but Aslan changed all that. But unfortunately, for millions of kids around the world, it's still always winter and never Christmas. So we now have on the same masthead, you know, the words 20th Century Fox and Franklin Graham, which is just, you know, again, God's sense of humor is just great. And the American premiere for the Voyage of the Dawn Treader is going to go to the church that collects the most gifts for kids through Operation Christmas Child next week. And so, similar to Wilberforce, we love to knock down all of these artificial distinctions that exist between the secular and the sacred, between for-profit and nor-profit, between entertainment and education. And it's just one of the amazing things that's happening here that I really am excited about talking to you guys more about. Walt Disney is probably one of the greatest people that we've ever had in the entertainment business. And people ask Walt Disney, what's the secret of you building this amazing company? And Walt Disney said, the secret to building any organization is I only hire yes-if people. What's a yes-if person? He says, well, think about it. Any question that you ask, generally people come with one of two answers. They say, yes. If I ask someone about a problem, they will say, well, yes, you could do this if you accomplish the following. He said, but most of the people out there are no because people. And when you ask them about a problem, do you think you can do something about this? They say, well, no, you can't do that because of this. You can't do that because of this. I always avoid those people because you can never move an organization forward without them. Henry Nouwen speaks about something quite similar to this. And he talks about how the biggest thing that prevents us from following Christ is fear. There's no accident that those were the first words that the angel spoke to our Blessed Mother. And there's no mistake that there's so much advice in the Bible about avoiding fear. But it comes in different ways. It doesn't just come for the kids in Narnia when they're facing dragons. It comes to the young couple, you know, who's thinking about if they're going to have kids. Well, you know, I'd like to have kids, but I can't have them because, you know, I'm not at the stage in my career yet where we can afford to have them. You know what? I'd love to leave this company and start this new nonprofit, but I can't do it because I'm just not in that season in my life yet. So fear manifests itself in so many different ways and always holds us back with that no because reason. People in this room, however, are fearless. I loved looking through the list here of the great groups that we have. As we were talking about earlier, Young Life, it's amazing the impact they had. Just 3 weeks ago, I was in Colorado Springs, and I met someone from Boise. And he was a very bright kid. He had just graduated from Harvard, and he had started his own website called Global Fast. And what that website was doing was trying to eradicate poverty and hunger around the world. He was led to Christ by a Young Life leader at his high school in Boise. The Pregnancy Resource Centers of Portland that are here. I mean, just think about how terrifying that is for a teenage girl to be in that situation. What am I going to tell my parents? You know, I can't do this. What are other people going to say to me about this? To be able to hold that girl and tell her, you're going to be all right. We're going to get you through this. This is a blessing. This isn't a burden. Last night I heard about New Horizons Ministry, which does fantastic work with people that are on the street. And anytime I hear about that story, I think about one of my favorite stories from Tony Campolo, where Tony Campolo is speaking in Hawaii, and he wakes up at 3 o'clock in the morning, his internal clock is off, and he can't get back to sleep, and he says, I'm just going to try to go someplace to find a place to have breakfast. And he gets to this place, there's only one place that's open, and it's in a really tough neighborhood, and he goes in and he asks the guy behind the counter, I think his name was Harry, just give me a donut and some black coffee. At the same time, about 10 different prostitutes walk in, and they sit down and they're really loud and they're talking a lot, and one of the girls there at the table, her name was Agnes, she said, you know what, tomorrow's actually my birthday. And one of her friends there says, oh, come on, Agnes, you know, please, don't talk about that, you're just going to depress us. She said, well, you know, I just, you know, never had a birthday. I just thought, you know, it'd be interesting to say it. So they all leave. And Campolo says to the guy there behind the counter, he says, do those people come in here much? And he says, oh, yeah, they come in here every night after work. And he goes, does that woman come in here? He said, oh, Agnes? Yeah, she's in here all the time. And he says to him, well, I got an idea for you. What if we throw a party for her when she gets in here tomorrow night? And the guy behind the counter says, that's a fantastic idea. Let's do that. So Tony Campolo goes out and he buys the crepe paper to hang around the diner. He goes out, he buys a birthday cake. They put up a big happy birthday sign. And they get the word out to all of Agnes's coworkers that they're going to have this surprise birthday party for her. So as Tony Campolo describes, there he is at 3:30 in the morning in Hawaii, and the place is wall-to-wall prostitutes. And in walks Agnes, and the whole place sings happy birthday to her. And she looks at the birthday cake, and she says, "This is the first birthday cake I've ever gotten in my whole life." And Tony Campolo says, "Well, that's great, you know, and it's because it's your birthday, you get to cut the cake, and you get to give everyone the first slice." And she looks at it again, and she says, "I don't want to be selfish, but I just live a few houses down. Would you guys mind if I just save this just for a few days, just so I can show it to other people and just so I can look at it?" And Tony Campolo said, "Absolutely, Agnes, you know, go ahead and do that." So Agnes walks out, and Tony Campolo gets up on a chair and says, "You know what, I think this is a great time for us to all say a prayer." And Tony Campolo prayed for Agnes, and he prayed that her life would be transformed, and he prayed that she'd find new opportunities. At that point, the guy who owns the diner suddenly feels betrayed. He goes, "Wait a minute, what's going on here? You didn't tell me you were a preacher. I wouldn't allow this if you told me that you were a preacher. What kind of church do you belong to?" And he said, "I belong to a church that loves to throw parties for prostitutes at 3:30 in the morning." And the guy said, "Now I know you're a liar, because there's no such church as that. If there was such a church as that, I'd be a member of it." But that's what's so amazing about all the different groups, and I would love to go through here, because everyone in here, you're not operating by fear, and you truly are showing what the love of Christ is in terms of how transformational that is, how inclusive that is. And those are the stories that really matter. It's not just the stories that end up on a screen, especially in the day and age now of the internet. These transformational stories that are coming out of the amazing work and the amazing ministry that you're doing, for the next century, those are the things that are going to be the most transformational that we have. Martin Luther King, probably the greatest man that lived in the last century, spoke about changing the culture, and he spoke about living in fear. When he found himself in Birmingham, he was getting criticized by a lot of his fellow pastors, particularly by pastors in the African-American community. And they said to him, "Martin, you've got to slow down. You can't keep doing this. You can't keep causing problems. If we just wait for a few more years, we're going to get this whole thing straightened out." And Martin Luther King said to him, "You know what? I'm tired of that word wait. Wait means never. We're always hearing wait. It rings in the ears of every Negro, and I'm sick of it. The big question isn't, why am I in here? The question is, why are you out there?" Because if you really were Christians, if you really were people that believed in the Word of God, you'd be fighting for this just as hard as I would. As Christians, we have two choices in this world. And this is something that Andy talks about so well, and I think it's the best thesis in terms of the culture, and talks exactly what Andy was saying. Dr. King said, we have two choices. Too often, Christians act like a thermometer, and they take a record of the temperature. They take a record of the climate, and they say, look at this. It's too hot. Oh, it's too cold. This isn't the kind of environment we Christians like. It's too bad. Or we can be thermostats. We can look at where that temperature is at, and we can work to correct it, and we can work to do something about it rather than complain about it. I am so glad and so honored to be here with people that are thermostats, that people aren't, you are people who aren't waiting, and that you are people who aren't operating by fear. Philip Yancey, one of Andy's collaborators at Christianity Today, tells a great story about being in Russia at the time of the Soviet Union, at the time of communism. He starts to hear different stories of people having Bible studies, and he starts to see that Christianity is flourishing and doing really well there. So he walks up to one of the communist officials, and he says, "Listen, can you tell me what's going on here? I'm overhearing a lot of people, and they're talking about the Bible, and they're talking about Christianity. What's going on here?" And the guy said, "Oh, yeah, it's a big problem. You know, we've tried everything that we could. We tried outlawing the Bible. We even turned some of these churches into communist museums to try to discourage people and try to get people to understand that, you know, God is dead and to follow communism. But we made one really big mistake." And Yancey said, "What was that?" And he said, "We forgot to outlaw Dostoevsky." And the Word of God can live on in these stories. Dorothy Day said, "I don't think our Creator minds when we learn about Him and we learn about the Holy Spirit through works other than the Bible." And the stories that are coming from these organizations, we're hoping to contribute some small way to that. through our films. Those are the kinds of stories that we hope to bring forth. The Voyage of the Dawn Treader has my all-time favorite character, talking mouse called Reepicheep. Lewis described him as a foot and a half of courage. When we meet Reepicheep, he has his sword, and he never abandons his sword. He is always ready for a fight. He's already ready to go at people. And at the end of the Voyage of the Dawn Treader, he finally gets to Aslan's country. And he's looking, and he sees that it's there. And he walks over to Aslan, and he says to him, "Your Majesty, my whole life I've dreamed of seeing your country with my own eyes. I've been on a lot of great adventures in my life, but nothing compares to being able to go to your country. Could I please go there?" And Aslan says to him, "My country was made for noble hearts like yours." And he goes on, and he's able to go there. That God-shaped hole that exists in our hearts, that exists in so many hearts, that exists with a lot of the broken people that you're helping to transform their lives, that is the most important mission I think that any of us can embark on right now. Our company is called Walden Media because I love Henry David Thoreau. I love the idea that we should all march to the beat of our own drummer. But I also recognize the insight that Thoreau has, which is most men lead lives of quiet desperation. And the reason for that is because they don't know where to go with that God-shaped hole in their heart. They don't know how to get it filled. Lewis talks about that God-shaped hole, and that's what led him to Christ. He said, you know, when I'm thirsty, I can drink. When I'm hungry, I can get something to eat. When I'm tired, I can sleep. But where do I go for that anguish and that despair and that anxiety? There is nothing here that I can get that will satisfy that. And that must mean I was created for a different place. And that must mean that this place is fallen and it can't meet the needs that we have. Lewis talks about how occasionally in our life, however, we will get these moments of ecstasy, where there will be a tantalizing glimpse of what lies ahead for us when we can finally be home and hear those words, "Well done." And I just want to thank and congratulate all the people that are here who are helping people fill that God-shaped hole and let you know how much I look forward to that day when we can all be together and hear from the words that you guys have so desperately earned. And we all know that grace is something that's freely given and not earned. Well done. Thank you so much.